Okay, thank you all very much. Thanks to the conference organizers for the opportunity and for all of you to taking the time to come to listen to my presentation. I'm going to talk about discovering open access content and the discoverability, if you want to search, and findability of open access. And I wanted to start by sort of expanding a little bit on the scope of what I was going to talk about, focusing not just on the discoverability, but effectively on the other areas, if you want, that influence or impact the discoverability of open access content. So I'm going to talk a little bit about researcher workflows. I'm going to touch on the tools and the platforms that we have today in our industry, and I'll talk about that in the context of the institutional repository in particular. And then I want to talk a little bit about the library role and where libraries and organizations like ourselves, like EBSCO, work together in service or in support of the discoverability of open access content. So I thought it would be useful to go back to 2002, talk about the Budapest Open Access Initiative, effectively where, if you want, the mandate was established, the mission was put forth to provide unrestricted free access to scholarly research. And effectively, the initiative set forth, I think, two areas in particular, or two strategies. One was the need for self-archiving, and I look at that in the context of the repository in particular, and two, a requirement, if you want, or a mandate to publish into open access journals. And the last piece, which I added, is speaks to the visibility of open access. So these are the areas that I'm broadly going to be talking about in this presentation. I thought it would be useful as well to look at this conversation in the context of opportunities and challenges. And I'm painting the picture as follows. I think we have an opportunity as an industry, service providers working with libraries to fulfill a mandate, right? To fulfill, if you want, a requirement to collect, preserve, and disseminate research output. And we have workflows and tools in place to do that. And those tools are the platforms, right? The platforms that allow us to collect, preserve, and disseminate. But at the same time, when we look at those platforms, we also look at a fairly fragmented landscape. So when we think of the institutional repository as the platform that the library may hold to collect research output, that's just one of many different types, if you want, of repositories. We have domain-specific repositories. We have scholarly collaboration networks. The short of this is that content sits everywhere, and the institutional repository is just one of many different platforms. We also have preservation systems, and often a preservation system sits aside of or from the institutional repository, so the platform where we actually collect the research output. And then we have discovery, right? And we need to think of discovery, if you want, in the context of a continuum. How do we ensure that that which we deposit is in fact discoverable? And if we think of discovery or the need for discovery beyond a journal article, how do we ensure the discoverability of all types of research output? So the call it the evolving scholarly record. And then lastly, who is involved, right? What is the role that libraries and vendors play in supporting these various areas? So it strikes me that this is somewhat disjointed, so I'm going to try to create a little bit of order in this process. So if you look at research workflows, and I took this, somebody earlier had shown this as well, I believe more in a circle, but this came from the University of Utrecht, and it outlines the different steps, if you want, within the research process, from discovery all the way through to assessment. And I looked and said, well, where is it that the library, an organization like EBSCO, a service provider, can provide service? And I looked at two different areas in particular. One is discovery, and two is publication. Discovery meaning providing a discovery environment for open access content, and publication supporting the publication of content into a repository or into a journal as such. So far, so good? I hope I'm not talking too fast, so if I do, just ask me to slow down. So when we look at discovery, I thought of this analogy. What are the pathways that we need to support to have an optimal discovery experience? So if I take a tree and I plant it in a forest, and then I ask my friends to go find it, it's a fairly useless exercise unless I provide some identifiers, right? Coordinates, a pathway to that tree in particular. So if you think of the discovery service that libraries employ, and where we in EBSCO put a lot of emphasis, I'm looking at both the discovery service, the platform that supports the discoverability of journal articles, as well as databases, right? And I should add as a platform also the repository, I think, as such. It is critically important that we think of the discoverability of that which sits within the discovery service through the lens of curation, meaning if we think of those coordinates, if you want, those identifiers, in the context of a journal article, a service that EBSCO puts a lot of emphasis on is what we call abstracting and indexing, right? It's providing those subject headings, in essence saying this article is about this subject, and leveraging those subject headings in the relevancy ranking in the search technology. The other thing is a degree of, call it an editorial component, right? Ensuring that that which makes its way into our databases and into a discovery service is sound science, right? It's not fake science, as came up yesterday as well in the reception. Beyond that, we need to think of the user experience. When we think of the research platforms that we offer today, what is it that we bring together holistically to ensure that researchers can in fact get to the right content at the right time? Part of that is linking technology. So when you get to a record, having the ability to go to the full text fairly seamlessly, and then thinking about what we should be connecting. What are the different object types that we need to connect? Meaning, if we have a journal article, do we need to connect that where appropriate and applicable to a data set? And the last component here speaks to the aggregator databases, if you want, because researchers will go to a research platform and also expect to find all types of content, be it open access or be it non-open access. So providing a holistic research experience, I think, is part of the equation as well. Going now to the next piece, which is publication. And here I'm looking at institutional repositories, publishing into journals, open access journals, as an example, and preservation. And I'm going to spend some time on preservation because I think that's something we have overlooked a little bit in the conversations today, and will be part of some of my subsequent slides. So I took this back from the Budapest Open Access Initiative statement of principle. Every institution of higher education should have an open access repository, participate in a consortium with a consortial open access repository, or arrange to outsource open access repository services. The question becomes, if we have this statement of principle, where does the repository fit into sort of the universe or the scope of different services that that we provide? And how do these workflows around the repository come together? So I think it was useful, or is useful, to look at this in the context of, I call it three Ds. Deposit, deliver, and discover. These are not necessarily connected services, but should be, to my mind, interconnected services. Depositing, speaking to the need to take research output and deposit it into a repository to fulfill a mandate, if you like. Delivery, which I define as delivering access, if you want, to that which gets deposited into perpetuity, ensuring that that which we collect is preserved forever. And then the discoverability, ensuring that that which we actually deposit and preserve is in fact discoverable. Broadly speaking, I think this is sort of the workflow that that we envision. So there is a publishing workflow. As content gets published, we have a need to capture that into our repository through a depositing workflow. We submit, we arrange, we describe, we store that content. Then we need to preserve it. We need to ensure its deliverability, if you want, forever. Preservation and safeguarding often is thought of, again, as a separate process. It's not tied to repository workflow. So I'm arguing, I think, that there is an opportunity here to connect these two. And then the discoverability of that content, which you spoke about earlier, which means enabling users to find that content. And we'll talk a little bit about the challenges in terms of discoverability as well, certainly for those objects that sit within the institutional repository. So looking at a repository in particular, I want to talk about object types and formats, and I want to talk about the workflows. So Clifford Lynch, who's at the Coalition of Networked Information in the United States, wrote this back in 2017. And he says, it takes us to a reconsideration of the purposes of institutional repositories. I believe this must be disconnected from the open access agenda for journal articles and repositioned in the broader context of managing and preserving institutional community assets. Broadly defined, the way I understand this, it means the scholarly record. Not just the article content, research data is part and parcel of that which we need to manage and preserve. And that's where institutional repositories need to evolve. This is, I think, what we're talking about. Often we see these areas separated, where on the one hand we have digital assets, on the other hand we have research output. But if we think of these, we have journal articles, preprints, technical reports, thesis dissertations, research memos, list goes on, then we have maps, posters, books, historical texts, right? We need to consider these and these various different object types as part and parcel of the scholarly record and something that we need to collect and we need to preserve and we need to disseminate and we need to make discoverable. This is a quote from Peter Suber, one of the, maybe the leader of open access, one of the founders of the open access movement. And likewise, he reaffirms the need to have an open access repository, OAI compliant, meaning we need to ensure that that which we deposit can be harvested. And he goes on to say, when universities host open access repositories, they usually take steps to ensure long-term preservation in addition to open access. And this is what you mean with long-term preservation. Does people recognize what this is? This is VHS, for those of us young enough to remember what it is. If I don't have a player, the hardware, to view these, they are useless, right? So this is to say that preservation speaks to the need to carry formats on, to convert formats. It's not just enough to deposit a copy. So when we talk about long-term preservation and data safeguarding, we talk about three things. One is the migration of file formats. If I have a Word document today, if I have a PDF today, how do I know that in 5, 10, 20, 50, or 100 years from now, I, in fact, can read that document, right? And it should be part of our mandate to ensure that it's readable forever. The other piece speaks to data integrity and file protection, right? If I have a JPEG, I need to ensure the quality of that file. I need to ensure there's no degradation of the quality of that file. I also need to maintain multiple copies, but I also need to know when and if something changes. If it changes in one place, it should change in the other, and I need to have an audit trail. In the repository workflow, I think we need to consider the multiple steps that are important, and anyone who has a repository recognizes these steps. We go from submission all the way through to adherence to certain policies. I put this in bold, and it may not be clear, but I think on description and policies in particular, we need to pay some attention. One is, what happens with the metadata? When we submit, when we ingest objects into the repository, we need to have good, solid metadata, because without the metadata, the objects are not discoverable. And we often rely on author-provided keywords when we support these types of workflows. So there is an opportunity here to use certain tools to enhance or augment the metadata. And in terms of policies, when something gets deposited into the repository, it may not be made available immediately, right? So within our workflows, we need to ensure that that's what gets deposited. If there is an embargo, we need to be able to identify, look at the publisher agreement, and then ensure if you want compliance with those publisher agreements. So, in summary here for the IR, for the Institutional Repository, it's important we support descriptive standards, Dublin Core being an example of that, and we can potentially look at applying controlled vocabularies as well. So when a researcher deposits his or her work, we can apply controlled vocabulary to assist with keywords and subject headings. The second piece speaks to harvesting protocols. For that which we deposit, we must ensure that it can be properly harvested. And we need to look at persistent identifiers for all that which we deposit. Because if only through identifiers for those object types can we link objects together, and can we create connections between these objects, which again may reside in very, very different places. And the last piece speaks to the integration I spoke about earlier, integrating with discovery services, looking at integration with publishing workflows, potentially with other repository platforms or domain repositories, and importantly, linking our repository content to a preservation and data safeguarding solution or system. In summary, I think we're in an era of democratization, free and unfettered access to content. We looked at the spectrum of open access, not just the journal article, but looking at the evolving scholarly record. And then we talked a little bit about the interconnected services or the need for interconnected services so we can deposit, deliver, and discover. I think here we also need to know or think about these interconnected services as modular services. To a large extent, if not fully based, even on open source, where we have afford libraries the choice to pick and choose, if you want, the modular services that make sense for their particular institution. And last but not least, looking at the need for optimal discovery, working with library service providers in partnership to create that experience, the user experience, the search technology, if you want, that's needed to ensure that that which gets deposited is indeed discovered now and forever. With that, I would like to thank you very much, and I would like to ask you if you've got any questions.